Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who are awakening to the realization that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I'm Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. Today, I want to take a departure from our normal routine on this program, which is to spend the first hour on the news and the second hour on something that is germane to understanding Yahweh's message, particularly in exposing and condemning the false prophets like Paul, so that we might encourage more people to walk away from religion and to consider a relationship with Yahweh. Today, I want to spend the entire 2 hours on the topic that we began to discuss in the second hour yesterday. And if Kirk, and this is very early on the West Coast, but if he wants to join us for the first hour as well as the second, I would encourage that as well. We discovered something yesterday that was really quite profound, based upon what Paul had to say. You know, he was called to this meeting at the Jerusalem Council, and it was because there were reports coming back to the disciples, particularly to Shimon Kefesh, but also to Yahochanan, Mataniah, and Jacob in Jerusalem, that this fellow, formerly known as Shaul, formerly a murderous rabbi, and murderous really has nothing to do with rabbi. He was a rabbi, and he was murderous, by his own account, on both the courts. Was claiming to have met Yahusha, something that Yahusha said, if anybody claims to have seen me before the whole world sees me, they are lying. Do not follow them. But he was claiming that he had met him nonetheless on the road to Damascus, in direct contradiction of what Yahweh warned us about. And that he was then preaching a message that was wholly and completely incompatible with the Torah, with Yahusha, with everything that Yahweh had to say, and was wholly and wholly and completely opposed to Yahweh's Torah and the covenant, which is the centerpiece of the Torah, that he had to create a new testament, a new covenant, to support his new religious beliefs that he was preaching to Gentiles. And Paul claimed that this God that he met on the road to Damascus had given him sole authority, without equivocation, without so much as any contribution from anyone else, absolute and sole authority to preach his new religion and his new covenant and his new testament to Gentiles, to replace the old covenant, the old testament, and the old God. You know, it's a preposterous thought, but nonetheless, that is the basis of Christianity. And so the disciples, particularly Shimon Kefesh, got reports of how the preposterousness of Paul's claims, and sent emissaries out to ask him to come to Jerusalem, so that in Jerusalem they could hear what it was that he was actually saying, to see if this is true, that he was in fact preaching against, in his single biggest issue was the existing covenant and its sign, circumcision. So to see if that was true. So here is Paul now responding to that meeting. And we know what was said in that meeting because it's recorded by Luke in its, at least in terms of the statements that are alleged by Paul and then the statements in response that are ascribed to Shimon Kefesh, known to Christians as Peter. And they were at odds with each other, where Peter, Shimon Kefesh, said, well, what you're saying is untrue, and here's the proof of it. So Paul says in his rebuttal, because he was soundly chastised in this meeting. It's obvious based upon Paul's response. This is Galatians. This is his first letter. And he is condemning the reputations, besmirching the reputations of Yahusha's hand-chosen disciples, the individuals that he had trained for 3 years, that he had appointed as apostles. He's besmirching their testimony, which of course means that we have to, if you're going to be rational, if you're going to be informed and rational, and you're going to believe Paul, you have to immediately throw away the eyewitness accounts that are chronicled in Matanyah and Yahochanan, the hearsay account that is in Mark, because it is attributed to Shimon Kephesh, Peter, who is condemned in this. His account is of no value to Paul, and therefore to Pauline Christians. And you even have to discount Luke, because Luke got everything that he's reporting from those same sources. And so you have to throw away Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And if you throw them away, you have not one word from Yahusha, the Christian Jesus, apart from what is said in Revelation. But you have to throw that away, too, because it is through Yahochanan, who was one of these disciples that Shaul, the Christian Paul, condemns. And he not only condemns him in the letter to the Galatians, but especially condemns him in the letters that he wrote to his love interest, Timothy. So, that's a problem. You can't call yourself a Christian, modeled after the title, the Greek replacement title for the Messiah. You can't say that you're a follower of Jesus, which is the replacement name for Yahusha, if you pay any attention to what Paul had to say. You have to discard all of that. And now what are you left with? Because Paul never once quotes him. He makes one attempt to take one statement, part of a statement, that he made completely out of context. It's a statement that he was making in reference to Pesach, Passover, and Paul took a half a dozen words out of context and then even then misquoted him. So you have nothing from Yahusha if you accept Paul. Because Paul said, but from those currently reputed and supposed, dokiai, presently presumed based upon opinions and appearances, to be someone important based upon some sort of past, they were actually nothing to me. Well, the only people at the Jerusalem summit that would have been deemed important because of their past would have been the disciples, three of which he will name later in this letter. They meant nothing to me. Well, if they meant nothing to Paul, then they mean nothing to Pauline Christianity, and Paul is the founder of the Christian religion. It carries through the faith of the God of man not take hold of. This is just very poor writing on behalf of Paul, but if we are to delve into an attempt to render that senseless statement in the intended manner, he is claiming that in God's presence, no man has any authority. No man has any, carries any reputation. No man has any God-given position. Now, of course, Paul claims that he was appointed sole apostle to the Gentile world. So he is, if that statement is true, then this statement is false. If this statement is true, then that statement that Paul said later is false. So one of the problems, of course, of lying is that you end up contradicting yourself. So there is no chance that this statement is true based upon the fact that Paul himself contradicts it often. But it isn't true in any regard, because with Yahweh, there are absolutely people who have hold positions of great responsibility. Adam, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Yishak, Jacob, Yosef. As you go through the list, no one in all of human history holds more credibility with Yahweh than Moses. And then there's the man that God loved beyond all others, that brought us the Psalms that tell us how to interpret Yahweh's Torah, how to study Yahweh's Torah, Daud, David. And then there's individuals along the way like Shamuel, and Elijah, Eliyah, and Hosha, and Yashayah, and Yirmiyah. These are extraordinary individuals that Yahweh appointed to extraordinarily important positions. So Paul's statement is wholly erroneous. There is no way to be informed and rational and view this statement by Paul as being credible. Next, he says, because to me, the ones currently presuming and supposing, of no account was their advice and counsel. This demonstrates emphatically that the conclusions that I'm sharing with you, based upon what this all means, what we therefore need to take away from this diatribe, where Paul is besmirching the reputation of the disciples, where Paul is saying that their testimony is meaningless, which means Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are trash. They have no value whatsoever to the man who wrote half of the Christian New Testament. Perhaps that's why he never quotes them. But if you take them out and you stick with Paul, you've got only Paul. Only Paul. Because all he does is mention the name of Yahusha, but never explains what he did, why he did it, or more importantly, what he said. Now, this is what he just digs himself in so deeply. But now from the ones currently reported and presumed, supposed to be important, based upon some sort of unspecified past, they were actually and continue to be nothing, completely meaningless, totally worthless to me. Contrary-wise, on the contrary, nevertheless, having seen and perceived that because I have been believed with the healing and beneficial messenger of the uncircumcised, inasmuch as Petros, the circumcised, that's where we'll rejoin. What we have just heard is earth-shattering. I mean, I am moved beyond words to tell you how important what we have just shared is. That with the letter to the Galatians, Paul was so antagonistic towards the disciples that he met at the Jerusalem summit. He was so at odds with them, so opposed to them, that he went so far as to say their testimony, their witness, their words were absolutely meaningless to him. Now, if you are a open-minded, informed, and rational person, and you are confronted with that, and you know the history of those 12 men, and particularly Shimon Kefesh, who was the most outspoken person at that meeting, Peter. And you know that the history of Yahuchanan, who wrote the eyewitness account bearing his name, John, Yahuchanan, and was the person picked by Yahusha of all of the 12, long after Paul claims that he was picked to reveal revelation, to take him to heaven and take him to the future to reveal revelation. And that the other contributor there was Yahusha's brother, Jacob, who wrote the book that has been renamed James, but bears his name, Jacob. That is a wholesale and total and complete repudiation of Paul and Pauline doctrine. And every Christian theologian in the world knows it, that Jacob's letter, that's why they don't very often preach from it, is a complete and wholesale repudiation of Pauline Christianity. And it's based upon that if you don't engage, if you don't act upon the conditions of the covenant and the instructions of Yahweh in the Torah, in his guidance, that there is no opportunity for you. There's no salvation. There's no relationship. You will never come to know God. complete and total repudiation of Pauline doctrine. And all Christian theologians know it. But what Christian theologians don't seem to recognize, although the brighter of them have, like Calvin, who I don't attribute anything sane, but Calvin nonetheless was a smart dude, just 100% misled. Calvin wanted to throw out Shimon Kefish's letter, Peter's letters, particularly 2 Peter, because it was a complete and total repudiation of Paul's letters. And I know Christians will say, oh, no, it says that Paul wrote to Scripture. No, it doesn't. And what is the problem with Christians? They can't read things in context. Why do they have to take things out of context to somehow take a scathing indictment of Paul's letters? And it is a scathing indictment of Paul's letters that was written by Shimon Kefesh. And to turn his condemnation of Paul and Paul's letters, the 13 that comprised a Christian New Testament, and turn that into an endorsement. I mean, it's just bizarre in the extreme if you're a Christian. I mean, you have been so twisted, so indoctrinated, so deceived, and it's your fault because you haven't bothered to consider anything in context, nor have you ever bothered to compare what Paul said to what Yosha said, to know that they're the antithesis of one another. But here in this case, now after we have to realize that all of what is found in Jacob's letter, Shimon Kefish's letters, Yaokanan's letters, Revelation, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all of it has to be discarded. All you have left is Paul's letters and Hebrews, which was written by one of Paul's associates. That's all you got. And you have no Jesus anymore, much less say Yosha, his real name. You've got nothing but an insane man who admits that he's demon-possessed, that he admits that he's a sexual pervert and ruthless. That's all you got. That's some religion, huh? That's a religion that somehow has fooled 3 billion people. Shame on you. Now, I understand if you were a serf in the Middle Ages and you were illiterate and you couldn't read, and that even if you could read, the testimony of Yosha was kept from you, and the testimony of Yahweh was absolutely banned, and there was absolutely no discussion by anyone in a language that you could understand of what Yahweh said, what Yosha said and did. I understand that you were victimized, and that's very sad. But today, there is no excuse. There is no excuse for being a Christian. The information is available. If you're the least bit open-minded, if you're the least bit inquisitive, if you just have a modicum of logic as part of your character, if you're willing to be judgmental, the truth will take you 15 minutes to discern. And it is affirmed over and over and over again. Now, when we return, this has all been to set up what follows, because a very good friend of mine, a member of the Covenant family, a contributor to our Shabbat program on Blog Talk Radio, sent this to me. Welcome back. This next statement that Paul made, we discussed at great length yesterday, but from a very different perspective than we're going to discuss it now. And Kirk, I know you've joined us now. I sent you a copy of the email that James, JB, who co-hosts the Shabbat show with us, sent, and who manages these as the administrator of the Yada Yah forum. And it was really enlightening. It was a tactic that we are attacked, actually, that we did not take. What we did yesterday is we just said, listen, Paul has now said that he is the messenger, and whether or not you say that he is the messenger of to the uncircumcised, or he is the messenger of the good uncircumcision, mm-hmm. is subject to debate.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you that it, the literal Greek reads that he has been believed. He claims to have been believed with regard to the healing and beneficial messenger of the uncircumcised, inasmuch as Petros of the circumcised. So he is telling us, Paul is the messenger of the uncircumcised, where Petros is the messenger of the circumcised. And you could also read this, that it's, since it's the messenger of the uncircumcised, this is really not to the uncircumcised. So it's Paul is the messenger of uncircumcision. And Shimon is being cast as the messenger of circumcision. So what James sent me was an analysis that he had done of every time circumcision and uncircumcision was used in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And so what he did is he said, you know, based upon Paul claiming to be the messenger of uncircumcision, he said, you know, I'm going to share with you every time that I found uncircumcised used in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And I want you to think about this because it's really profound. The first time happens to be in Shemot, which has been renamed to Exodus 6:12. And let me read that.
Okay.
It begins, Moshe, he spoke to the presence of Yahweh. It's interesting, by the way, that Moshe is speaking to the presence of not the Lord, not to Allah.
No.
It says he is that Moshe spoke to the presence of Yahweh. And actually, the presence here is pana, which means the face of. So Moshe is speaking directly to the face of Yahweh. That means he's standing face to face with Yahweh.
Right.
So Moshe, he spoke to the face of Yahweh to say, if the children of Yisrael, if they do not listen, Shama, if they do not listen to me, then how do you expect that Pharaoh will listen to me? For I have uncircumcised lips. So the first use here, he uses Ariel to speak of, because I have uncircumcised lips. I mean, it's just a fascinating use, you know. Now, we think of circumcision as the as correctly of cutting off the conical tip of the male genitalia, and that's the sign of the covenant, to be circumcised. Well, he's saying, I have uncircumcised lips.
Yeah. Well, okay.
So what he's saying is that my ability to communicate is inadequate. It is not only it's not correctly representing the covenant, because I'm uncircumcised. I'm outside of this. I'm my communication is inadequate. It's probably the best term of all would be inadequate.
Yeah,
for uncircumcised here. I am, my lips are inadequate. If the children of, you know, of Yisrael won't listen to me, then why do you think that Pharaoh is going to listen to me? Because my lips are inadequate. They're uncircumcised. So Paul is the messenger of inadequate.
I was trying to think. To me, it would be like being bound up or twisted or...
Mm-hmm. How about this? You know, to be circumcised is the sign of the covenant. You're cut into the covenant. At that point, right, you're liberated. So you're liberated when you're part of the covenant. So at this point, you're still connected to all of the corruption of human institutions. You have not been set apart to be liberated and freed in the in Yahweh. But as someone who is not of circumcised lips, you're not doing what we do in the covenant, which is to cite Yahweh's testimony. Mm-hmm. And so he knows his own testimony is inadequate.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy there.
So and that's the first use of uncircumcised. So when Paul says that he is the messenger of uncircumcision, he is therefore identifying himself with Moshe before Yahweh engaged with him, before he agreed to work with Yahweh, before he walked with Yahweh, before he did anything with Yahweh, including the Torah. So this is, Paul is saying that he is the messenger of what Moshe was before before Moshe and Yahweh engaged together. In other words, Moshe, didn't he come out of Pharaoh's family?
Oh, yeah. He knew Egypt better than he knew anything else.
Right. So wasn't Moshe in fact, I think we find historically that he was a general in Pharaoh's army, that he was a prince among the Egyptians, that he was into the religion, into the politics, into the military nature of Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
He was as uncircumcised man as you can be, and that's what he's admitting here. You know, why is Pharaoh going to listen to me? I mean, I'm one with him. I'm part of that. I'm part of the whole thing you're trying to get the children of Israel away from.
And his mother would have circumcised. He would have been physically circumcised, though. His mother would have done that before she put him in the bathroom.
Right. That is correct. His mother would have done that. Yep. So,
but he is surrounded with Egypt. Yeah, he is totally Egyptian.
Yes.
In his lifestyle. I mean, he knew that better than anything else.
Right. Yeah, and so he is saying specifically that he is the messenger of uncircumcision. Uncircumcision, let's just look at the letters. It's the Ain, the Rosh, and the Lamed.
And the Lamed.
So yeah, so it's the perspective of an observant person and the shepherd,
and
being led. So this is the word used for uncircumcision. So it is the antithesis of the positive aspects of those words. I mean, you can be led by human shepherds,
sure,
and misled. You know, you can observe the plans and schemes of priests and and of generals.
Oh yeah.
Right. So yeah. This is what he's saying. Now he then again refers to uncircumcision in Shemoth Exodus 6:30. But then let's move ahead a little bit to Korah, which has been changed to Leviticus. Kara means to be called out. To call out, to be called out, to be invited, to be summoned, to be welcomed, to read and to recite is what Kara means. Kara 19:23. And when you come into and enter the land, which would be, this is the promised land. The
promised land. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And plant all of the food and plant all of the food trees. So, by the way, is you plant all the food trees. It's just an interesting aside here. You're going to engage with Yahweh. You're going to enjoy and participate in everything. It doesn't say that Yahweh planted the trees, does it?
No, Yahweh gives instructions.
Right. He provides instructions, but you're going to do the work. Why? Because work is rewarding. If you know, it's one of the problems. I was driving in downtown Cincinnati yesterday, and in some of the areas we drove through, there were lots of inactive loitering youth, and the inactive loitering youth, and this is the middle of a workday, were all loitering and inactive outside of liquor stores. So they weren't working, didn't have jobs. Now, by the way, jobs are plentiful here. Matter of fact, my...
Hello? Oh, okay. Well, I can't really talk about Cincinnati, but I was curious when he comes back. I was rather curious to hear what he...
The work required to maintain those orchards, you know, to prune them and to harvest the fruit and then to care for the trees during the winter and prepare the trees for them. It's a lot of work, a lot of labor. And he says, he said that he had never once hired a Pennsylvanian, an American worker, that even stuck with them for half of a season.
Really?
Never once. And he says, you know, we advertise locally. We'll hire anybody that comes to us that is willing to work. We pay a good wage. It varies between $17 and $30 an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, we pay a good wage.
Wow.
And he says 100% of our workers that stay more than a few months are Mexicans that come up on, there's a visa permit.
Sure.
For Mexicans, so long as you provide housing for them.
Sure.
The housing is provided free, transportation is provided free, and they make between $17 and $30 an hour. And there are more work than there are people to do it, and yet he cannot hire an American worker because no American worker will do the job. They're unwilling to do the job. So, just to see this loitering. Yahweh understands there's value in work. So, Kirk, I understand that we had an internet bobble there, and that part of the communication on Yahweh's plan, where he provides instructions and we do the work, which is exactly what happened with Noah and the Ark. It's exactly the basis of the covenant. He provides instructions, we engage. And it's a completely disingenuous approach to Pauline Christianity, which is you don't do anything, you simply believe. And even Paul here says that he is he was believed, and that he is the healing and beneficial messenger. He's the good messenger of uncircumcision. So what I was just trying to say is that having driven through downtown Cincinnati, people who are handed money, food stamps, welfare, that sort of thing, unemployment benefits, they were just loitering, doing nothing with their lives, and they're loitering outside of liquor stores where what they're doing is counterproductive.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that jobs are plentiful, and specifically the orchard in Pennsylvania, 1,000 acres, can't find an American that's willing to do the work and pay $17 to $30 an hour.
I was shocked the other day when you said about California benefits, because I had not.
Oh, yeah.
That.
Yeah.
I did a quick total. That comes up to like $44,000 a year.
Yeah, $21, the equivalent of $21 an hour if you're on welfare in California. That's why California is responsible for a third of the welfare payments in the United States. So, but anyway, that's aside from this conversation, although the benefit of working, of engaging to do something, of acting, of participating in the process, is something that Yahweh always holds out as important to our very nature, and important to any relationship that we're part of. And, of course, it's wholly and completely contrary to Pauline doctrines, which is why I'm glad it's mentioned here. Anyway, he says, and you plant all of the trees, count as unharvestable, as aral alala, unacceptable for harvest, its fruit for 3 years. It exists for you as uncircumcised and not to be eaten. So unharvestable is communicated through uncircumcision.
Mm-hmm.
And it exists for you as uncircumcised. And so Yahweh is telling you that if you are uncircumcised, you're unharvestable. I'm familiar with a number of harvests that are really important. One that's on our immediate horizon, about 11 years out,
right?
Teruah. Isn't Bokodom a harvest too? Yahweh presents Bokodom as a harvest.
Oh, absolutely was. That was the first.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, he actually presents Shavuah, where we're empowered and enriched. He presents that as a harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, you're unharvestable. Of course, it's
the line of the sand, doesn't he?
Yeah, and the fact that it's 3 years, what he's dealing with is the 3 years of Yosha. He's dealing with the that was necessary to enable the first three Moed Mikre that make us harvestable. We are harvestable because of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkurim, those 3 days. And it was Yehoshua's example over 3 years talking about and fulfilling those mikra that make us harvestable. It makes us immortal, perfect, and adopted.
Yeah.
Adoptable is what makes us and perfect and adoptable, and immortal is what makes us harvestable. So it's over 3 days, over 3 years, first 3 years, unharvestable, uncircumcised. So if you're uncircumcised, you're unharvestable, according to Yahweh. And he says that this exists to you as an example of uncircumcision, of being separated from God, of that which is not beneficial, that which is not nourishing, that which is you should not consume. So if Paul is the claiming to be the messenger of uncircumcision,
unharvestable fruit, yes.
Yeah, Yahweh is saying that he is providing unharvestable fruit. Now, this reminds me of something. Yahweh's way of, of communicating is always, if you're really paying attention, you'll find connections that will go cause your hair to stand up on your arms. In the midst of Yahweh's condemnation of Paul specifically in the Sermon on the Mount, and much of the Sermon on the Mount is a specific condemnation of Paul and of Pauline doctrine. He goes into a long discussion about good trees and bad trees, of good fruit and bad fruit, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
And he's saying from a bad tree, 100% of the fruit is inedible. There is nothing good that comes from a bad tree.
Yeah,
and nothing bad that comes from a good tree.
You can't put your foot in both camps.
That is correct. And it's a direct tie to this prophecy. Regarding in Kara, this instruction on Kara. When you come into the land, Paul was in the land. Man, do not eat, do not consume anything that is uncircumcised.